This is Farfetched Threads, our people podcast, where you can hear the real stories about life as a farfetcher.
Hello and welcome to Farfetched Threads, our people podcast. I'm Eve Broyle, Director of Product Marketing, and today I'm delighted to be talking to Diana Lopez, Group Product Manager, and Lynn Chung, US Research Manager, on the topic of driving innovation within the Farfetch product team. Hi, Diana. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome, and thanks for joining me today to talk about the product world at Farfetch. I'd love you to introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell us about your role at Farfetch. Diana, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Eileen, good morning, and it's really a pleasure to be here. So I work as a group product manager in FPS, also known as Farfetch Platform Solution. And as a product manager within this area, I work with brands and retailers, allowing them to expand their global capabilities and creating kind of new shopping experience, both online and offline, really in a partnership model, while really working with internal teams, building and evolving all of our platform capabilities.
Great. Thanks for having me. Hi, Eve. Hi, Diana. So my name's Lynn. I've actually spent about over 3 years at Farfetch, and a lot of my role has been about bringing our product and business teams closer to our customers and our prospective customers out there in the luxury fashion space. So it's really about bringing awareness, understanding, and clarity across the needs and motivations behind people, and really guiding our design and product management teams with the stories and the truths of our customers when it comes to, you know, not only just their shopping behaviors, but across other areas of life, such as traveling, dining, or social activities they might be involved in, how they're undergoing the pandemic, how they're forming communities, and so on and so forth. So it's really about understanding their life beyond just fashion as well. So these sentiments and stories are what we as a research team try to make sense of and contextualize to help define new opportunities for driving that customer value forward.
That's brilliant. So today we have a product management expert and we have a customer insights expert as well. And between us, I think we've got over 10 years experience working in the product team at Farfetch. So that's a lot of knowledge that we've got here to discuss. And I can't wait to hear your thoughts on the innovation mindset at Farfetch. Diana, I'll start with you. How do you think we drive forward innovation as a product organization?
I would say that innovation, it's really at the heart of our platform. And I know this may sound a cliche, but it's really something that we can see directly linked in our mission of really being the leading global platform for the luxury fashion industry. For that, we obviously need not only to offer the best solution for our clients, and we are talking here around brands and retailers, but we need to offer more, and we really to offer it in a different way. And a huge piece of that, it's really, in my opinion, this innovation part. An example of that was really kind of all the work done around Store of the Future that Farfetch launched back in 2017, where we unveil our augmented retail vision, and that currently we are evolving and we are driving through the market within the luxury new retail piece that really allow us to drive the transformation of the entire luxury industry in the years to come. But obviously, this needs to be more than a mission, right? Of course, we are all moved by visions, by mission, by a sense of utility and a sense of identity in everything that we do. But this also needs to be reflected in our day-to-day challenge. And that's why we also really spend a lot of time thinking what we call this model of the now, the next and the future, which basically allow us to scale at the pace in terms of the product design and product development. And I would say that is visible in several fronts, right? That's visible in the way we organize the teams in terms of product works, where we have key people working in innovation projects, open innovation teams, really this part where individuals have this particular time to focus on this decision. That is also visible in the challenge that we put ourselves in the OKRs, the so-called objectives and key results, and that we put ourselves as objectives annually. That is also organically developed and requested in our relationships with brands and retailers that also expect us to help within this model of partnership into facing this new paradigm. So I would say that it comes really a full circle, this innovation mindset piece.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting because you talk about mission versus practice. And I think the majority of tech companies like us would have innovation at the heart, would have innovation linked within their mission. But you describe a lot of practices and structures that we have in place within the product team that enable us to take that mission into our everyday practice. I'm really interested in the now, next, future model, because to me or to another listener, perhaps you might think that the now is about the practicalities and what we have to get done. And you can push all the innovation into the next and the future to say, oh, it might happen next and it might happen in the future. Does innovation play an important part in the now of that model, or is innovation mostly what we will be seeing in the future?
That's actually a great question, because when we look into innovation piece, we do mention a lot the failure in terms of the execution, right? And that really comes to the light that most of the times innovation is that particular key and trend word, but then when we go to our job, into our kind of daily tasks, it's not embedded on that. When we are talking in terms of the now, the next, and the future, this is really kind of an approach to deliver a strategy. And what we can see, it's that innovation, it's almost an assumption that is present in each one of these phases, into the now, the next, and the future. I think that really comes to life into more of starting the now with the POC, really kind of with that proof of concept to test it very quickly in the moment that we are, and then really evolving to the next. And the next usually is we are going to scale that POC, and it's not a POC anymore. It's applied to an additional customer. And then the future can be, let's internalize this in our platform, because it's really something that it can make sense for our customer. So I would say it's an assumption if that this needs to happen in several phases, and almost it's needed to divide that innovation through all these phases.
I think this would be a great time to hear from Lynn on her view on the innovation mindset of Farfetch, because for every proof of concept Diana's team are running, and for all the initiatives that we have within the 9X future model, many of them are coming from UX research insights. Lynn, how do you find that innovation plays a role within the day-to-day of a UX research manager?
Great. So innovation plays quite a prominent role on the day-to-day for any researcher at any point, actually. And we work very closely with our product design and management teams when it comes to, you know, setting that context of the problem or forming the foundations for that ideation to move forward. And, you know, if we think about it, we're all just coming together to design something valuable for our customers, yet viable to our business. So I often think of this analogy in my head that says, you know, design is a piece of cake. And of course, we all know it's not as easy as a piece of cake. But essentially, what I wanted to get to is really think about how, you know, from a problem to a solution, that actually requires cake, in that we do need the distinct yet complementary layers of practices, disciplines, professional backgrounds, walks of life, and expertise to really come together and work together so that this cake actually tastes great for that special someone or that party of people you might be designing for. So I think in my kind of 3 and some years here at Farfetch, I've observed a lot of the sort of entrepreneurial and experimental nature of individuals and teams. And what that's really allowed us to do is think about trying and, you know, new and different approaches to processes the next time around, and actually building on a tried and true pattern, let's say, if that's also an option, or even applying knowledge in a new context or project. So if we want to repurpose a certain framework we used in one project, how does that help us with the second project, with the iteration of that project? And so that will help us really sustain that truth or that customer insight across those multiple business or design initiatives we're working with. So I think this clarity that brings across the knowledge application will help us also sort of think about the problem from multiple angles, and doing something a little bit more, multifaceted is what I see there's value in the way we approach innovation at Farfetch. So I think being able to build on this new process and, you know, pivoting on existing ones is where we see the innovation mindset quite versatile at Farfetch at the moment.
And how do you actually bring that into action, Lynn? So it sounds like you have lots of ways into UX research in order to, and lots of innovative ways into UX research that help bring amazing insights on customers, brands, retailers, all the different groups that we look at within our business. But how are you able to turn all that thinking into practical steps and action?
We as a team actually start to keep a pulse on some of those recurring things that we hear from our customers, such as their sentiments, their attitudes and behaviors. And we actually try to figure this out across all studies. And when this insight actually starts to reveal a larger theme, we shape it into what we call a research feature. And it's really just an exploratory research study. But what's interesting about this is that it really opens up space to explore real human topics freely. And the key is that it's not being business led or business bound, right? And in many ways, the outcome of this work can actually lead to very specific ideation sessions on a specific topic that we kind of distill from that research. Or sometimes it just feeds into the design spikes. And, you know, design spikes are actual design explorations that are pretty cross-functional by nature, and they're quite intensive. Some of these activities might include, you know, understanding existing knowledge, exploring possibilities and actually conceptualizing what that might look like and what that might feel like, and even actually going to the extent of understanding and evaluating those propositions from a customer value point, from a business value point, and a brand value standpoint as well. So it's really about looking at those three different facets and understanding, you know, how does this proposition actually even deliver value, and do we want to go for it or not? And so there's a lot of hypothesis testing at this moment as well. For instance, you know, kind of going back to the idea of a research future, because it's such an open piece of work, one of the things that we're currently observing right now is, you know, a really compelling theme around identity, and really looking at identity through the relationship one has with their body and culture, which I think is quite a timely topic. And obviously that's been observed through various research studies across the last 18 months. And one of the most classic shopping challenges you would imagine is about size, right? But when you actually dig into it, what we've been learning is that people are actually just struggling with confidence in what they're shopping for, and ultimately confidence in themselves as a result of what we as an industry have actually defined. So you can imagine there's a lot to reframe and explore in regards to the narrative and the experience of inclusive luxury. So just all in all, these ideation sessions, what they do is just allow us to reframe that initial problem at hand.
I think it's really important to think about triangulating different sources of research. So of course, you know, I work within the research team, so our forte is within qualitative and quantitative research with our customers, and we have that kind of face-to-face with our customer base all the time. But I think being able to triangulate with market research or even the macro trends that are happening out in the open, and really allowing our stakeholders to bring that insight in as well from their angle, and for us to facilitate that sort of triangulation of insight, is going to help us be a little bit more robust in our thinking, rather than taking our customer insight as face value. It's really about contextualizing what that implication is for our customer as well.
So that's interesting, that phrase triangulation of insights, because I'm wondering to put myself in Deanna's shoes here. So you receive what Lynn's describing as the triangulation of insights. And I think we would have macro and micro insights here into how the market is developing, how our customers are responding, whether that's a B2C customer or a B2B customer. And Deanna, your job now is to take all of this and make product. How does that work for us? Do you have an example where a trend or insight has been able to drive forward product innovation?
Yeah, for sure. I think, first of all, a product needs to be relevant and needs to be an answer to a client need or to a client perception of need, right? So really, also when we are building that roadmap needs to be that declaration of initiative that are built up on our product vision, making sure that the initiatives that are there are actually an answer to clients' needs. So they need to be meaningful, but they also need to be relevant, okay? So I would say, and picking up this triangulation part, I'd say that we need to embed all this knowledge, right? So we need really to make sure that we know how the market stands and how are we going in terms of the product evolution. What are kind of the main opportunities that we have there? What are the main threats where we need to bet more in our strengths or more in our weakness in terms of the products that we have in the market? And obviously, within this view, we again go back to the model of the now, the next, and the future. So what are the products or what are the new business models or even what are the enhancements that we need to do in the current products that we need to do? I guess this lot of information that we receive, right, this bunch of information that we receive, give us a notion of direction where we want to go within the certain product, but also gives a notion of emergency, right? Because when we are doing a roadmap and when we are doing product development, we need to have in mind that we need to tackle a trend that is temporary. So our kind of time window of having a good product in the market just sits within the 6 months, within a year, for example, or that we may lose a competitive advantage if we don't act into a particular kind of extent of that product. And it can be entering into a new market, or it can be actually adding new features that are proven to be kind of the piece of cake that needs to happen for that product to go live. Then I'd say that in terms of roadmap, we need to think really how to do it, right? So most of the times what everyone wants in terms of product is that the product is scalable and it's done fast and it's delivered that value, that value proposition in a very quick way for the customer, but again, unsurfacing the idea of the POC, that's rarely impossible. So we've usually starting gaining some knowledge and really kind of the model of testing, learning, failing. The idea is that we need to do it fast. The faster we can do it, the faster also we have that knowledge. And just to quote here John Mayer in his book of Laws of Simplicity, knowledge makes everything simpler, right? So that's the way we need also to gain in order to evolve that product. And then the idea really of becoming the product that is a mature product that can evolve and that continues to answer to the customer. You were asking about an example of all of this, right? And how can we look into the market and how can we arrive to this value proposition? I would say that all the work that we've been doing in Farfetch around the buyback model and kind of the second life that basically allow us our customer to resell their items and really get a credit to buy a new one is an example of that, right? So this was something that it was really an emerging trend, right? So as you know, and I think this kind of this COVID period really brought the assumption that really our life on Earth, it's really finite, right? And we as a human are really small. So we need to take care of our planet and we need to make sure that all the everything that we can do in terms of new circular business models, greener materials or more sustainable technology are part of it, right? So that was really the emerging trend that we had there. And we felt, okay, we need to position, we need to bring some product to life. So at the time, we really partnered with the third party into our ecosystem to offer this in our customer. And then we realized that we learn, we fail, we learn again, we redo it. And then we understood that probably it could make sense to move from POC to product because we were having a lot of good results in terms of the client satisfactions and client service, which basically allow us to internalize this kind of partner behavior and build this in our platform. Okay, so that's really an example of moving to POC to product and how we innovation was really the driver into our strategy.
You talk about failing fast and failing fast time and time again. I think that's essential for any quick moving technology company to try, see if it works and move on. Lynn, I'm interested in how the concept of failing fast fits with UX research, because failing fast is key to innovation, but it can be very tricky to work at that speed if we're including detailed, reflective, thorough UX research within the process.
Great. I mean, that's an interesting question because I think there's so many different fidelities of research we actually end up doing. So, you know, most of the research I've been talking about that frames those greater design spikes or those design explorations are quite exploratory by nature. You're looking at an open space and discovering something, right? But we also do a lot of work with very specific tests that we do launch as an experimentation test. And a lot of those tests are actually based on, you know, concepts that have been iterated upon and have been defined as, you know, actual solutions that, you know, Diana has mentioned that makes it to the roadmap and it becomes its own initiative. And so in the context of that, as a research team, we also are very much involved in that evolution of that particular product or product feature, let's say. And we do supply that sort of research mindset and understanding, well, actually, how does that customer need, how is that actually being addressed at this point in the journey in the product development cycle? So we're always sort of sense checking that as we go along. And so that might be, you know, a series of usability tests that just help us give us a little bit to work with and learn and refine and tweak. Or it might be a series of tests that are actually based on hypotheses and assumptions that we've had coming out of that whole ideation session. So even testing a value proposition at that level, we're able to sort of gauge that with a little bit more creative experimentation, nothing that not only just looking at experimentation through the lens of a digital product, but actually how do we take our sort of ecosystem and think about, well, how do we actually test this in the context of the boutique? You know, how do we work with our stylists to gauge a little bit of the validity around this value proposition and start to use that as information and insight to then triangulate across more hard data, let's say. So I'd say research is not only from the kind of discovery and exploratory research that's really open, but also all the way down to the moment we actually start to refine and even commit to launching and scaling something as well.
So what I'm hearing from both of you is that it is possible to be fast and fail fast, try again, from both a product management and a UX research point of view. I wonder if people listening to this podcast may feel that actually in a big organization, that's really difficult to do. Diana talked about our more tactical short-term innovation needs versus longer-term innovation projects. What advice would you give to product managers or UX researchers, really anyone within the product org who is trying to adopt that innovation mindset, that fast-paced, fail fast, try again approach to work? How can other people in other organizations make that happen?
Yeah, so I'd say that first of all, we need to be bold in our principles, right? Because all start with that part. So let us allow time to look into the big picture of how things are evolving, and let us look into the society issue and problems and really study the market instead of just focusing in big trend world. So innovation, it's really more than this. Innovation, it's really around kind of thinking through it and think where we want to go as an organization. And I would say this allows us to have a broader idea of where our products fit and where we need to evolve, and really define that innovation strategy in a formal but also in an informal way, right? Because one of the things that we need to have in mind, and that I think this was a huge learning in terms of how things work in a large company, as you are saying, is that there are also different kinds of innovation, right? So innovation can be happen basically in two main quadrants in terms of kind of evolving new business models, but also kind of adopting and pushing forward new technology, right? So I think the big piece of advice is that we need to understand where our company needs to be in terms of that innovation strategy, and realizing that probably that need is a mix of several times of innovation, right? It can be kind of a routine innovation where we don't require a new business model nor technologies, but we just need to explore it further, what we have, and really push forward that well thought out design and market strategy, while at the same time that company needs to, let's say, to complement this with a disruptive innovation where we do require a new business model but doesn't require new technologies. So I would say that balance, right, and that complementary between different kinds of innovation, it's something that we need to perceive as a product manager and work also in the company to socialize this. And I know it's two pieces of advice, if so, forgive me, but I need to mention also the execution part, right? Because what I'm mentioning now, it's really all about the innovation strategy and where we want to go. But then if we don't test And if we don't fail fast and learn fast, we also don't go anywhere, right? So we need to have that focus on the execution. And we all know that execution, it's a huge deal in companies in general, and that most of the organizations deal with that. But at the end of the day, we really need to reserve space for this and socialize also with tech teams and with the teams that are really kind of in the field to make sure this happens. So I would like to end just with a quote from Melissa Perry from the Build Rep, where she says that at the end of the day, we all want to do things and we all want to evolve within the innovation, but there's also this this part where we need to allow time for that thinking process. Okay, so it's okay that the act of thinking doesn't reflect directly into something that we can give tomorrow, but the idea is that this is always a starting point to everything.
Amazing. Lynn, what do you think? Does this apply to UX research? Diana said to be bold in our principles, that to think about different kinds of innovation, and I guess to distinguish between the innovation theory and the practice or the action that we do. Does that apply to UX research as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of being bold with innovation at different parts of that process is essential. And I think in order to be bold, I felt like on my sort of, I guess, journey at Farfetch, it is quite a large organization, right? So we have so many different walks of life and professional backgrounds. And what that really meant for me is, how do I communicate what I mean from these various vantage points and perspectives? And how do I listen to those around me as well? Not only our customers, but actually who we actually work with. So I guess when we say like how we, you know, sustain this sort of bold mentality around innovation, for me, what was really interesting to reflect on is just thinking about the language that we share, what sort of that shared language that we do have as a business, as an organization, and the people we actually work with. So understanding what we mean when we talk about something not only helps us begin from that same page, but also I think it really helps us reveal other dimensions or aspects that we haven't considered as individuals or professionals. And that could even lead to, you know, resetting a whole workshop agenda, a meeting, or even just redefining the entire scope of a project we set out to do together. And I think that creating that space for that to reset, reflect, and even redefine, I think that risk we're taking, it's not just from one person, but it's through many other voices that we were collectively able to share with. And I think that's sort of the mindset I'd like to highlight as well, in terms of how do we take risks, but how do we take them together? And I think that's where I feel that sort of boldness kind of comes through within the innovation mindset here. And that's what I feel like I've been learning a lot about on my day to day.
I'd love to end today's episode with one piece of advice that you each have for product managers, UX researchers, anyone within the product org, as to how they can bring innovative thinking to their day-to-day work. Lynn, do you want to go first?
I'd say be versatile in the way you think, from macro to micro, because you want to capture all angles of a problem or insight, as it's really important to be flexible and inclusive in your thinking.
And I would like to pick really this inclusive part, just to mention that for me, it would be really the importance of diversity for innovation, right? So we are talking around different angles, different backgrounds, different identities. And the idea is that how can we surface all of this diversity into an innovation mindset in order to bring kind of this short midterm view, but also in order to build the future.
Brilliant, thank you. So our closing thoughts from both of our guests today around the role of diversity, inclusive thinking, thinking about identities, background, different ways in to help drive innovation within your product organization. That's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, Lynn and Diana, for a great conversation and for sharing all your experience with us. And of course, thank you to everyone who's been listening in today. Stay tuned and see you next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you never miss an episode of Farfetch Threads by subscribing to our Spotify and Farfetch People YouTube channel. If you're ready to do what's never been done, visit farfetchgroupcareers.com.